Welcome in, time for KER Politics, thought-provoking views from leaders in the field. The views of our guests do not necessarily represent the views of either Corey or Big Al.
Now, time for KER Politics.
Hey, welcome in, time for our daily editorial. Big Al is in his probably final home in Seattle, in an independent living facility in North Seattle. There are some very interesting people in here. I made it a point to try and meet as many people as I could. Yesterday afternoon, I didn't have to help my daughters and son-in-law because they insisted on moving me completely by themselves, which I certainly appreciate. Having said that, I wanted to get a political feel, a feel politically for where people were at in this particular facility. It's a very, very nice place to call home. I do want to say that. The staff is incredibly cordial. They go out of their way to help you. The food is like a five-star restaurant. The wine is not like a five-star restaurant, but it was better than I expected. So I'm kind of happy here, to be honest with you. And I want to thank publicly on the air here Sarah, Kyle, and Stephanie for actually moving me entirely into this place. I don't think you guys are listening to this, but I want to tell you, you should all be so lucky as to have relatives like I do. Jimmy, let's start talking about, as I was telling you off mic, I was reading significantly last night, devoted a significant amount of time to the Republicans and their base of operations right now in your state, South Carolina. Most of my information, Tony, I know you're going to try to find out where I live so you could shoot me, but I got to tell you, I had to get most of my information from the New York Times because it was the only paper available in the entire facility other than the Seattle Times, which is great for sports. But in terms of international and national politics, it's really not very good. I will say the Times, I was painted a very, very unbiased opinion of the Republican Party in South Carolina. They talked a little bit about Tom Scott. It's not Tom Scott. It's Randolph. No, who is it again, Jimmy?
Tim Scott.
Yeah. And then, of course, they talked a little bit about the lady who they feel will probably be in the vice presidential slot. Jimmy, what do you think about that?
Well, Tim Scott, it seems like there is some discussion that he's probing potential presidential run.
Yeah,
he's a conservative in a very red state, but it's not as red as many people think. When they go to the CPAC list of the most conservative states, actually of the red states, it's the lowest ranked. So, you know, there's problems with the legislature, but Tim Scott, he appeals to a lot of people here. He won, you know, fairly handily in this last midterm, or, you know, in his last reelection campaign.
Yeah.
And so, you know, he has some national notoriety, but I don't think he has anywhere near the strength to compete against a Trump presidency. But I do think he would be probably a key member in a new Republican presidency in an executive branch as a strong position in maybe Health and Human Services or another senior cabinet member.
Yeah, I would have to say that the Times painted a very, very glowing picture of Mr. Scott, I have to say. It's Congressman Scott, isn't it, by the way?
Senator.
Senator Scott. Sorry, I got the wrong house. That's easy to get confused about that in the place where I am right now. Jimmy, let's talk a little bit about China. Off mic, you were telling me that you think the situation between America and China, and I would assume Russia, is probably volatile enough that it could instigate another world war. You want to elaborate on that?
Yeah, so we've talked before. We talked with Josh Phillips from the Epoch Times a couple of years ago.
Right.
Talking about the level of effort that the Chinese are doing to control resources around the world, to increase their diplomatic power, improve and increase their military capacity, certainly have tremendous strides in economic power and information control and information warfare. So they've been working very hard at that in this whole view of unrestricted warfare.
Yeah.
They're not looking at direct military confrontation, but they're looking at how they can basically, in Sun Tzu's terms, you know, fight without firing shot and win. And I think they're doing an effective job with that. They've gained a tremendous amount of power, but they've also been very provocative. This big balloon, this probably, you know, massive electronic and collection asset that flew over the United States that the Biden administration did nothing about.
Yeah.
That shows they're filling intelligence gaps of what they need to do for potential conflict.
Yeah.
And it looks like, as I speculated, that there is probably a lot of radio detection and electronic signal detection capabilities that was based on that platform. Then they, very provocative things, there's another balloon apparently off Hawaii. We don't know if it's Chinese or not, but they actually fired some weather sensing lasers over Hawaii apparently this last week.
Yeah.
And they were to test very sensitive meteorological information, which is what you need for accuracy in a hypersonic missile strike. And of course, U.S. Pacific Command, you know, the Pacific Fleet, you know, massive amount of U.S. military resources, the 25th Infantry Division, very, very island defense, U.S. defense power in the Pacific is based in Hawaii. So
yeah,
that's an interesting bit of information. And of course, the Chinese have announced that they tested a system that would completely jam or confuse missile defense systems from the United States. So they did that testing this weekend with a launch of a rocket that said multiple systems out there and you know, to jam and confuse. And of course, what I've said that all you need is a few fishing trawlers off the coast to launch 1,000 balloons. And of course,
that's
we're
right.
going to send all these people up there to shoot them down. That would be a complete overwhelm of our system.
Yeah.
But very effective and cheap way to confuse the U.S. defenses. And what we're seeing is these types of actions that are directed towards U.S. capabilities while they've significantly increased their amphibious assault craft, built these carrier-killing missiles, DF-21, DF-26 missles, fifth-generation fighters with J-6, and then, of course, are continually probing in Taiwan.
Yeah.
This makes you know, a lot of risk out there, and at some point, the more we're bogged down in Ukraine with trying to resource them, that we're spread so thin, we spent, you know, a tremendous amount of money in defense on the Ukrainian territory for something that it doesn't actually, there's no end in sight to it.
Yeah.
It puts the U.S. in a very precarious position, and it shows obviously some weakness on how our decision-making process goes down as we send up multiple fighters to shoot down what looks like Hobby Lobby balloons for kids after the first balloon was shot down.
Right.
So this is putting a tremendous amount of risk, confusion out there in the world, and probably incentivizing the Chinese that would really like to reintegrate Taiwan into their system and force them to bow down to the Beijing leadership, so to ensure that the democratization that has happened on Taiwan and what was in Hong Kong never spreads into the mainland China.
Yeah.
And that's what I think is their ultimate objective here.
Well, Jimmy, let's talk about the odds of that happening. I am thinking that I think it's going to happen eventually, but I would have to say that right now the time is not right. There are too many players involved right now, and I think mainland China and the CCP would be, quite frankly, I think it'd be foolish to do anything right now.
Well, I think there's probably a limited window that they're looking at. I think a little bit opposite from you, that there's a limited window that they could operate with a very incompetent and what looks like compromised leadership in the White House.
Yeah. Oh,
they
I don't disagree with that at all. No, not
so,
at all.
So if the continuation of this, like, kind of understanding of what China is doing happens in the United States, And the media, you know, is beginning to get on board. Corporations are beginning to question their investments there. The Chinese, you know, with the 100% lockdowns with COVID, that was just a huge mistake that actually costs, you know, some of their, you know, some of these big global corporations. If this continues for a long period of time, then their power and their economic strength, their military influence begins to diminish. Yeah. So they've got to look at a very narrow window to be able to operate when they have leadership in the White House that would be indecisive and would be afraid of getting into a bigger, broader war.
Yeah.
So I think they may act sooner than many people would think because they're afraid of the backlash over time and their diminishing power if they don't act soon. So, and then of course, if they do act, there's a risk at that point, but they also, you know, it'll be a judgment call whether or not they think they have a big enough economic power and influence over the world to maintain ties and basically knock down the United States. If they can knock down the United States from the top of the pile, then they become the top of the pile and people will have to succumb to their wants and needs and desires. And that would be controlled by very, very small leadership at the top.
In the U.S.?
No, very small leadership at the top in Beijing.
Okay. That one I don't have any trouble believing. I want to say one thing. I'm very, very proud of our president going over to, you know, risking his life to help President Zelensky. I understand that he yesterday afternoon challenged Zelensky to a push-up contest when Zelensky, you know, inferred something about his age, and he said, you know, let's see who can do 80 push-ups first.
I think this was an unbelievable PR stunt. Apparently, according to Jake Sullivan, the National Security Advisor, they did warn Moscow that he was coming in order for for the Russians not to, you know, basically risk Third World War with the United States.
Right.
Of course, U.S. European Command had to probably be aware and have, you know, forces on standby in order to support a visit like that.
Yeah.
They did keep it quiet. He did show up, but. And there's some level of influence there when Russia is unable to keep that from happening. It really shows some weakness on Russia's ability to influence Kyiv. So that's one side. But the other side of it is they're blowing air raid sirens when Biden lands. You know, that's just bogus. There's no protocol for him to walk around in the street with air raid sirens going on. The Secret Service wouldn't allow that if there was a real serious threat of that.
Yeah.
It was definitely a PR stunt. I don't know what the long-term objective was here. Where Biden is failing and where his administration is failing miserably is getting the Europeans to take a stand on what they want in order to achieve support for Kyiv based on their financial standing, based on what they perceive the threats are. They need to do more, and we've been by far pouring the most money into this thing with no strategy of how to get out of it.
Yeah.
And that is what's incredibly embarrassing. So the Europeans, if it's a problem for them, they should be taking the lead on this. We should be in the background supporting and helping if that's what their, you know, our relationship requires.
Uh-huh.
But at the same time, there's no strategy, no policy, no U.S. End state to where we're throwing money at, no accountability for a lot of this is going. And of course, you know, it is a tremendously just damaging, terrible damaging war. With really far, far too many Russian soldiers being killed, and of course far too many, you know, Ukrainians being killed as well.
Of course.
It's just a terrible circumstance, and him showing up there was a PR stunt to show strength, and I think it was somewhat, in my view, foolish, a bit embarrassing, and in spite of the popular kind of like short-term gain he'll get from the media and from many people, I don't think it's doing anything to solve the problem.
Well, I don't think he had a choice. I think he had to go. If he didn't go, it'll be a huge error by omission on my part, Jim.
Well, I think, you know, we've been throwing, I mean, over $100 billion. $100 billion, you know, that is more than 10%. It's almost like 12 or 13% of our overall defense budget. is gone.
I realize that.
But yeah, so and why is it going on? Why is this continuing on? Because Joe Biden last February, about this time, said, well, you know, if the Russians just come over to the east and just attack the east, that would be okay.
Right.
You know, basically giving Putin and the Russians an okay to come over. So very inconsistent, very I just don't see a strategy. And I have somebody tell me what the Department of Defense and National Security Council has in mind to end this. All they say is we're going to continue to support it until as long as it takes. What is the end state? What are they trying to take? Where does that go? And I don't. So I have absolutely, without a policy, without a plan, without a strategy, without some sort of coordination with allies. Yeah. I think this is just absolutely just a political stunt and really an embarrassment, in my view, from any real effective leadership.
Well, I think you're right, Jimmy. We really don't have any effective leadership in the United States right now. It is, you know, I had some interesting conversations with some of my neighbors about that last night. Their opinions are kind of interesting because, you know, you're looking at a very small demographic. When you look at the ages of the people in here, when you're looking at the economic strength or lack thereof of the people in here, it's a pretty high demographic. But I will say that it's really, really interesting to see how middle America, I wouldn't call them middle America, that's a huge mistake. It's interesting to see how they feel about what's going on back in Washington, D.C., I've got a dinner scheduled for tonight, and we're going to find out in depth what they think about what's going on right now. I will say, surprisingly, not necessarily focusing on the folks in here, but focusing on other people who I'm talking with, the popularity of Joe Biden is, I would have to say, not as bad as you and I think it is. These people think a little higher of President Biden than we do. And, you know, one thing that I have to say is when you look at everything on a daily basis, when you look at what the CCP is doing, when you look at the strength politically and economically of some of the other countries in the world compared to the lack of strength economically here in America, I don't see how anybody can have that opinion, Jim.
Well, I think if you're surrounded by Seattle and if you've grown up or lived in that bubble and you have economically done well, then you're very much a progressive or an ideologue on the left. And that basically blinds you from being open-minded.
I think you're right on that. I really do. It's going to be interesting to see how this thing transitions for me. I'm either going to have some converts on my side or I'm not. One of the two is going to happen.
Well, Al, you know what? I'm going to give you a little recommendation.
Yeah.
Keep the politics there to a minimum.
Oh, of course. Of course. You kind of have to.
Enjoy your life and don't get too strung out on that.
No,
Because you're fighting a losing battle inside the Seattle metropolitan area, in my view.
Yeah, I agree, Jim. That's kind of what's going on right now. Jimmy, anything else you want to say?
The one thing that I think is really important.
Yep.
This Ukraine ship, I think, is bogus. You're going to see more issues with Russia in this next week. They've been pushing off a lot of artillery, a lot of tank attacks, Bakhmut and Vuhledar, and, of course, a couple of other areas. They're not making a lot of headway, but you'll see more of that in this next week.
I think you're right.
We'll see how that turns out. But the most important thing, I believe, that is happening right this minute is Kevin McCarthy, the House Speaker, released 41,000 hours of Capitol surveillance footage from the January 6th protests to Tucker Carlson.
And?
So Tucker Carlson's producers, and they're going to be running through all this data and all this information to show, to come up with a kind of a bigger picture than what the January 6th committee presented. And I think it's interesting that he picked Tucker Carlson to do this because, you know, he's got the largest, you know, opinion show on cable news.
Yeah.
But he also has a big research team. And he also, you know, Kevin McCarthy has said, hey, this was a riot, blah, blah, blah. And there's, so there's a little disconnect between Carlson and McCarthy. And it'll be interesting to see how this plays out because – if it turns out that there's a lot more information out there that was covered up by the January 6th committee that shows, in fact, that it was nowhere near what the media portrayed,
right,
this is going to undermine that entire narrative. And once again, as we approach the 2024 election time, you're going to see a lot of people questioning the narratives that they've been told on COVID, on January 6th insurrection, on the border issues, and, of course, what we've seen with crime. And this Ukraine issue.
Yeah, I think you're right, Jim. I think
and as you get more transparency, more openness, pray that, in fact, people begin to open their eyes and say they've been lied to and tricked immensely by our government.
I think you're right, Jimmy. The future looks to be pretty interesting politically, I have to say. And I would take, at this point in time, probably say over the next 18 months.
Yeah, it's going to be a crazy time.
Yeah, it is.
And sure. And I will tell you something else for you guys out there. My wife and I have been watching The Chosen. It's download the app, watch it on.
Right.
And it's I think it's a very, very interesting retelling of the Bible story with a little bit of drama, but you know, getting the essence there, it's enjoyable to watch.
Well, maybe I'll take a look at it. I know the story pretty well, but you can always learn more. Jimmy, thanks a lot for your time, bud. I'm going to go have breakfast.
You bet. Have a good day, Al.
Thanks, Jim. I appreciate you saying that. Bye-bye. See you guys. Let's get some comments.
To find out more about today's guest, visit us on the web at www.kereport.com. You are listening to KER Politics.